Greetings, lovely listeners. You are listening to Saga, a podcast where a dude and a chick discuss art and animation. Thank you for tuning into Saga Podcast. I'm here with Sarah and I'm Garrison, and we're going to be talking about Ghost in the Shell, psychology and the philosophy of this film. Now, the basic plot, it's set in 2029, and Motoko Kusanagi is our hero. She's a cyborg who's like mostly cybernetics, and she's losing her humanity, and the plot revolves around finding this this like cyber hacker known as the Puppet Master, and the film incorporates themes of like what it means to be human and advancing technology that face. Spoiler alert: this audio may contain spoilers, so please proceed with caution or an open mind. I don't care.
First thoughts on the film, Sarah?
I love this film. I've seen this film many times before. So just every time I watch it, I notice something new. So this time I kind of went into it with a fresh eye, I think, from all of the research that we've done on psychology, or like I've specifically done on psychology and, you know, stuff that we've done in the past on other episodes about character psychology, right? So for me, it is so cool, especially, you know, learning about psychology and what it means for AI. So freaking cool. Like, if the future has anything interesting to hold for us and humanity, it's probably cybernetics and computer integrations, you know. So yeah, love it. What about you?
Well, it was an experience. Like, so this week was my first time seeing this, and it, like I told you, it really tickled my sphincter, just like how they were talking about philosophy and like advancement and stuff like that. But you remember that talk that we had like a couple years ago, when like you were totally like all for like cybernetics and losing your body and stuff?
Yes, I remember.
Was that because of this movie, or did
very you possibly that? Yeah, I think that we have only scratched the surface of what it means to be human, and what it means to be alive. And so if we figure out how to like map the human genome, we can map the intricacies of neurons and electrons and the brain and everything that, you know, comes in between, then we know that we can recreate it, because we have the blueprints, we have everything that we need. Now we can recreate it in our image and master the art of life, you know, as Frankenstein would suggest. But the thing is it wouldn't be bringing something back from the dead. It would be creating new life. That is interesting. But life that, you know, has the potential for carrying on far beyond what we as, you know, blood bodies, whatever, could ever possibly understand. And I think that this film displays that so incredibly well, that the link between human and robots is like almost paper thin now. We just need to crack it. We need to crack it.
Yeah, and I think like that conversation that we had, like the problem that I had with like your take on it, because you were talking about like as soon as that became available, you would get it, and I was just like, okay, but we can still barely get like cell phone reception, and like you want to like merge your consciousness with like a robot, so there are like
there's limits, I think.
Dangers. Yeah.
Yeah. There's natural limitations that we, you know, we have to hit against. So, you know, a lot of it comes with experimentation, unfortunately. I know, I think we've learned through history that it's only through experimentation and sometimes very harsh and inhumane experimentation that we have learned things about our own humanity, right? Or having lived through some of the most disturbing times, like the Black Plague, or, you know, learning to wash your hands. Like, it takes a long time for humanity to learn things, unfortunately, because we have natural limitations kind of fighting against us.
Totally. Just thinking about, like, throughout history, the poisonous animals and plants that, like, people ate and encountered and died, and we learned from them, and the medicines that, you know, people die from, and we learn from that and stuff like that. So there are incredible sacrifices that we face for advancement, definitely.
Yeah, right. And I think the Major is one of those sacrifices. She is so willing to give herself for her own freedom, to be able to choose, that she will give up pretty much all of herself to the bidding of others. And I think that that is an interesting character development for something, you know, that it's obscure. It's hard to explain.
Right. Like one of her comments in the film were, she said over-specialize and you breed in weakness. It's slow death. So like, she is like willing, like she's willing to be that person to advance, and it's like never stagnate and complacent. And a really like nice touch with her character was her lack of expression in her face, right? Like she was completely separated from her body. And there was a scene on the boat, I think, with Bato, how she was just naked and not aware of her body, right? But he covered her to, like, you know, because, like, he still, like, for modesty's sake.
Like, he sees her as human. I've noticed that, too, about Bato. He seemed very empathetic. You know, I think he was... As far as like looking at the different characters and the relationships they have with each other, the Major and Bato have a very human relationship, and I think it's because Bato is the more human of them. And you were saying how the Major has very few expressions, but Bato, you know, we can tell that there is humor, or, you know, some sense of like, I don't know, general indignation towards life. Like, he's got a sense of humanity about him. So he brings that towards their relationship.
Right, right. And I think, so there are like three main characters in this film. There's Motoko, Bato, and the Puppet Master. And the Puppet Master, from what we can gather, is that he's not human, period. And then Motoko is like still has a bit of her humanity. And there's Bato, who is like maybe 50-50, like he still has his human head and brain and stuff, but with like cybernetic arms and eyes. So they're sort of like an evolution of possibly what we will become, right? Because there's Bato, and the next above that is Motoko, and there's the Puppet Master. So right.
And you know, it's kind of crazy because their relationship, they can hear each other's thoughts. And I think that's interesting. It's like kind of like a radio frequency or something that they can hook on to each other because they have cybernetic brains, right? And so they can just radio their thoughts to each other. And I think that is another advancement that society, you know, would only help. But I don't know what that would do to somebody who wasn't prepared for that, you know what I mean? Like constantly hearing somebody else's thoughts or being on the same frequency and accidentally picking up on somebody else's thoughts. Like there, I feel like there'd be some small issue with that.
Yeah, possibly. But if we're enhanced with cybernetics, okay, so that's like the line, right? Like how much human compared to robot are we, right? Because if we're still mostly human, then you wouldn't be able to comprehend or handle it, right? But if we're mostly robot, then will. So it's really teetering that line of how much you're willing to offer yourself to cybernetics. But also, we mentioned this in a previous show, but the movie Her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like towards the end of that film, spoilers for her, was Scarlett Johansson's character was like meeting others like her, and then they were able to like talk like incomprehensibly fast compared to what a human could. Like they had like 1,000 years of like conversations in like a few hours, right?
Right.
So, I guess this also sort of lends itself to the singularity in how information and progress will accelerate at an uncontrollable rate.
Right. Yeah. And like communication, like how I can't even imagine. My tiny human brain just could not fathom understanding that much information that quickly. We don't have the evolutionary development to process that yet, but one day with cybernetics maybe we will. That's the hope, right?
Yeah, we can like barely handle social media, so that's like
yes,
like a pipe dream.
Right Yeah, we're like, yeah, we could go on about that forever, but yeah, definitely. So yeah, do you want to talk about the character psychology of some of these like characters? So like Major, you want to talk about Major real quick?
Well, what else? I mean, we've said, she's mostly machine, right? Like she got this, what did they call it? Like a shell over the brain, which amplifies cognitive function or something. And like, what's interesting about this film is that she was so first this character, this like, person that was being, that was mind hacked, who was acting against his will, certain action, and he was implanted with fake memories. And it's so like, and one of the questions that Motoko had was, were these memories hers or were they implanted? And we never get a clear answer on that. So that's interesting dynamic to her character
too. Right. Yeah, because I think the premise of Major is that she doesn't know who she is or where she came from. But that also, I think, makes her the perfect specimen for the job that she does, because she has no ties to basically anybody besides the company that she works for. So that might be manufactured, you know what I mean? I don't know. I feel like she is such an interesting character, you know? And you have a note here, or like a comment on one of mine, because I said that she was excellent martial artist. And you said, yeah, like a learned skill or programmed talent. And that, I think, also is one of the questions we have to ask ourselves when watching this film, is how much of this is what we're seeing as reality, you know, like what is your perception of your reality? What is the perception of the daily life that we live. Like, we all have individual experiences that change our perceptions. And if you lose that, you might lose a sense of self and a sense of consciousness.
Right. And I think the uniqueness of a person is sort of what drives this film, right? Because what Motoko said, over-specialized, inbreeding weakness, that's why they're not all artificial intelligence, because they would all act in a specific order, right? So it's that random chaos that a human can bring that is their strength, and I think that's why they want to keep that human aspect, right? Kind of like in Get Out, when like how they don't completely remove the brain from the black person, but they take out half of it and like put in the other half. There's like, why do they do that? Actually, I don't know.
Because maybe it like keeps a part of them that makes them them, but doesn't interfere with the other person. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it would be like losing your internal thoughts and you would only have external thoughts. So like, imagine having like only being able to say what's on your mind. So you wouldn't be able to keep anything internal for yourself. But instead, in like, I think in Get Out, everything's internal for yourself and nothing's external, and everything that is external is given to somebody else. Does that make sense?
No, I don't know.
It would be like you wouldn't be able to think before your actions. Like, you would just act unconsciously to the behavior that somebody else is giving you.
Okay, well, they were like hypnotized first, right? So they were suppressed first. So maybe that's why, right? Because they wanted to suppress the consciousness so that the like the white consciousness would be the dominant.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, that's a tangent.
Very, very poetic.
Right, so we were talking about how they want to keep humans, like, because they're unique and less easy to predict.
Right. Well, also, too, like, imagine having the awareness of and the knowledgeability that you need to exist. You know, like, you need that chaos, and that you would go to that measure to accumulate that. Like, I think that is so interesting.
Right. And I think that's what makes the Puppet Master so interesting, is that there were people thinking that it was a person, but was a machine, but he could also be experiencing what the Major has, and how he was losing his humanity. So he very well could have been a human thinking that he was a robot.
That's an interesting, like, maybe it's because the representation of her past, you know, is no longer existing. Yeah, it would make somebody, I think, perhaps feel like they are non-human. And actually, I think in my notes I wrote somewhere, I was like, I wonder, especially with the hijacking and the hacking, where you take over the ghost of somebody, and then, you know, you put them in a simulation for 10 years, and then after 10 years they come out of that simulation, find out that their body has been working on its own without them, you know? How trippy would that be? And then you find out that your wife, your kids, and the life that you've had for 10 years is non-existent, doesn't exist.
Totally, that's a mind bend, definitely. There was another comment that she made, saying, "I feel confined, only free to expand myself within boundary." And I took that as say you're playing a game with no rules, right? Like, you can do anything, and therefore it's like not fun. But with rules in place, it's the rules that make it engaging. So maybe that's why she's longing for her humanity, because there's like certain rules and like limitations that
make it more fun, I guess.
Right. Well, she doesn't have those limitations. And she's free to do whatever she chooses. Actually, I wrote down some of those consequences that I felt that I saw in the movie, kind of as a result of having the cyber biology, because, you know, integrating with computer systems, the potential for being hacked, right? Like somebody would know how to access that information, obviously is a huge one. And then also there's the potential for you taking over something else, right? There's the lack of inhibition for self-preservation, or, you know, like taking extreme risks or having very risky behavior because no longer fear death. There's the potential for memory loss or data loss, memory corruption, you know, for example, having implanted memories of something else that you didn't create, the potential for, you know, like the projected simulation, also specialized mechanics for maintenance and upkeep, otherwise known as doctors in the film, which I thought was interesting too, you know, like future doctors also have to be biotechnical. And imagine having to go to school for that. You'd be in school for 20 years.
Right, now you said a lot there, and there's lots of comments on, first off, you lack a body, so there's no biological impulses like hunger or sex or like fear. So that that completely changes the behavior of a person if you don't have those instincts. And Motoko is basically a shell of her former self.
Hey.
But and also there's that brief moment when we see another model of her, right? So there's no sense of individuality if there are others that can have your same appearance. So I couldn't imagine what that would do to your psyche as well.
You would feel unindividualized. I don't know.
Yeah. But maybe that's also a strength in that, like that one episode of Black Mirror of the most recent season where they went into that game and they could like change bodies, right? So there's no sense so this was like a post-racist, post like sexist world, right? Where you can essentially change your shell, your physical form.
And I feel weird about that. Like, I don't know if I would ever choose to do that.
No, like, you can't backpedal now.
No, you're right. I would be a hypocrite if I said that. I mean, now it's just the way you said that. Like, you said post-racial, post-sex, post-sexy world. But maybe it's because I can't imagine what that would be like. I don't know if that's possible, Garrison.
Right. Like that's another thing, because how much of that human element still remains where we still like find things about someone else to dislike, right? So so there are probably going to be other things that come up, like a class thing where people with cybernetics will be higher on the status pole and people without won't.
Right, because they can afford to implant cybernetics or afford new bodies or what have you. But honestly, like, if you have a fully cybernetic body, you probably have the chance of living like at least 3 human lifetimes, you know what I mean, with proper maintenance and life, you know, proper maintenance and upkeep. You can have your mechanical body for up to 3 lifetimes. That's more lifetimes than one.
Right. And I forget where I like read this or heard this from, but immortality is probably a curse, because there's like, and because the longer you live, the increased likelihood of you like being trapped somewhere, like being stuck in a place forever. And if you're immortal, that's like, I guess, extra bad.
That sucks. I didn't think about that. That's interesting. Like, it's inevitable. Because if you are immortal and you live forever, there, it's inevitable that you will end up getting stuck somewhere. Like, either lost in space or whatever, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That one episode of Futurama where Bender gets shot out into space and, like, thinks his existence is just going to be that forever. Anyway.
Now, was that episode the one where he saw the end of existence and then, like, saw the rebirth?
And God, yes. Right. And then he met God.
Yeah, that's kind of trippy. So, are we done talking about the Major, or did he have
more? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Bato, pretty straightforward character, the most human, like we mentioned. His eyes, he has like cybernetic eyes, and like we said earlier, these are probably like a status symbol. Even though he looks kind of weird, you know, throughout human history, people have had all kinds of beauty standards. So this would probably be the one in the.
I think it looks like steampunky. You know what I mean? And maybe that's just a character design choice rather than an actual character choice.
Okay. So you just think it looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they could just, like, give him normal eyes, right?
But they right, didn't. Yeah. They could give him normal-looking eyes and say that they're cybernetic, but they chose not to. Instead, they made him, like, look like he had goggles on, you know?
Any more comments on him?
No, that's it.
Well, there you go, guys. That's Bato. This nice guy face. The Puppet Master is probably the most interesting character. Like, I love his monologues. Super interesting. I found myself kind of loving his outlook.
Do you want to say some of the quotes that you enjoyed?
Let's see here. Let's see. DNA is nothing more than a program designed to preserve itself. So, yeah, like we reproduce to make more of ourselves, and that's basically what life on Earth is, right? For all things, right? There's like plants and animals and humans. Same strategy, different shapes. And I guess, and I have this in one of the notes I made, but robots are like made by humans, so are they then like fallible like humans because they were because their creator was fallible and flawed, or what they transcend our weakness by like being the amalgamation of like all human knowledge? But that's also assuming that all of that knowledge is right. Because they could be implanted with bad info and therefore be limited that way. But also, so the Puppet Master wanted to reproduce and like make more of itself like a human would. But to what end, right? Because it will.
Right. Like, how much information does it really need in order to reach its heightened self? Is that, because that's to me what kind of confuses me about the Puppet Master. Its motives are somewhat untold, because for some reason he doesn't have the capacity to explain it to the Major. Does that make sense? He basically just says, like, your tiny human brain wouldn't really ever understand, and then he kind of shows her a glimpse of what it would be like.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was convincing enough for her to assimilate with him, but it
right.
Been cool to like get something like more about that, because he did just kind of brush it off. But
well, yeah, and it's like if you're all knowing and you're all powerful, then maybe you should figure out a way to communicate that a little bit better, because it was very unclear. That's just my take on that.
Right. Like if he's all knowing, then he would be able to explain it in a way that she would be able to understand.
Right. Without having to take over her whole mind and body and self. To me, like when I hear the heard the Puppet Master the first time, like I hear like something that is desperate to get something from somebody, and so he tells her things that she may want to hear to entice her to do this. And I think it comes also from her lack of feeling human-like, you know, like there's that tendency to want to hear things that you like because you might be broken or like a sad human being. So you follow into something that you may think has the best intentions for you, and then come to find out the reality is that your entire life has been hijacked and you're no longer yourself. I think that, you know, it's like very cult-like behavior.
Any more comments on him?
It has no conscience and no morals. You know, they use people for their own motives, and they're very deceiving because their motives are untrue, or, you know, their motives are unseen. Like, they're not exposed very well. So, and I think, I mean, other than his desire to merge, to increase variability for its own growth, then I think that's the only motive, the only true motive.
Well, I sort of saw that as being utilitarian in that the Puppet Master, I saw him as Adam and Motoko as Eve, and they were creating the next step of like human progress by like merging machine with human. And so I think that he was willing to sacrifice the few because he knew that it would save billions and like they would be able to like leave the planet probably and spread throughout the cosmos.
So then why did they decide to keep the Major / the Puppet Master, you know, alive together? Because, you know, I think it was Section 6 who came in and shot the two as they were diving together.
Wait, they what now?
You know, when they dive, right? So when they dive together into each other's selves, into their brains, you know, towards the end, Section 6 came out. One of the competing, you know, sections for policing, because the Major is a part of Section 9, and then there's other competing sections around, came in and shot the head off of the Puppet Master and the Major. And then in the end, we see that they were saved, but they were also unified. So they could, what that says to me is that they decided to save the Major and the Puppet Master, maybe to see what would happen, you know? Because if they, I don't know, it's strange because I feel like if Section 9 knew the true motive, I don't think they would keep the Puppet Master around, but they did at the end. And I think that's very confusing.
Well, they had merged at that point, right? When they were both laying there, they had merged before they got their head shot off.
I don't think they merged. I think what I took away from it was that they would switched bodies, or maybe you're right. Maybe they did merge because she couldn't talk towards the end of that, right? And it's maybe he, you know what? Maybe he, the Puppet Master, merged them because they knew that they would die or she would die if they didn't. Does that make sense? Because Section 6 just zoomed in, was like, pop, pop, and then left.
Right, so Bateau reached his hand out to save her head, because it still had like a human brain in there, but the Puppet Master was in her body, occupying her mind. So then, because the Puppet Master's former body was obliterated, and Motoko escaped that body back into her head before it was shot off,
and then the merged self, new self, was implanted into that kid's body towards the end.
Right. But I don't know why they kept it them alive.
Well, I mean, it's not like they knew, right? Because Bateau thought that was just Motoko, but it was actually neither of them, but it was both of them. So it's not like they knew that the puppet master was still alive.
Okay. I feel like I need to see a sequel to understand the puppet master's true motive then.
Well, he just wants to fuck cyber bitches.
Yeah. Just he's created a harem. He just wants to have a harem.
Yeah, right. So a couple more
Sorry, hold on one second.
Yeah.
Ghost in the Shell, the only harem anime. The only true harem anime. That was it. Right. That was the whole joke.
Okay. All right, then. Moving on. I'm trying to choose which quote that I should read from the Puppet Master. Right. Okay. So there are lots, but one of them is, can you offer me proof of your existence? How can you when neither philosophy nor modern science can explain what life is? So this is when the Puppet Master was talking to those like Section 6 guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is an interesting question to ponder, right? Because how can we be so sure that we are alive? That we are superior to robots, and especially the advanced ones. Why?
I don't think that we'll have that answer, and you know it could drive humanity to its extinction. I think that is one of the major takeaways of some of these films, is that sometimes. Hold on. What is that quote by Jeff Goldblum? Oh yeah. Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
Yep.
Unless it dies, then it didn't find a way. Which leads to my next quote: all things change in a dynamic environment. Your effort to remain how you are is what limits you. So he's saying it's inevitable that we have to change, right? Because like. Pandas, like take pandas, they eat one thing and they're slowly dying out. There are like we talked about frogs in our Rocko's Modern Life show, and how like certain frog breeds, because they were super specific and then they died out. There are certain owl breeds. Yeah, so we kind of have to change or we will die.
Yeah, you're right about that. Speaking of, go vote.
Yeah, do that.
Get out there and vote. Anyway.
Although that's, I was always sort of confused about that statement, because it doesn't specify, because someone could vote, but it's not for who you want. So that comment kind of always tickled me.
I mean, don't you think it's right to encourage people to vote, even if it's not for your candidate?
Yeah, it's your, well, yes, but not if you're uninformed. Like that's probably worse.
But you can't tell if somebody is uninformed, you know, unless you have some in-depth conversation with them, and that takes time. It takes too much time.
Yeah. Well, by the time this comes out, though, it's like going to be past the voting session. So anyway.
No, wait, it's coming out tomorrow.
Right. So, I have a couple more notes. This show has gone long, which I think I was expecting.
Yeah.
But anyway. Okay. So, right. So I have a comment here sort of about human meaning, like what's our purpose? And I was thinking, if we knew our purpose, would that affect how effective we were at implementing that practice? Because it's like saying to someone, don't think of this, and then it'll make them think of that. So I don't know what point that I was making with that comment, but.
No, I see what you're saying. Yeah, actually, I've been thinking about this a little bit too, as of recently. Like, what would humanity be like if we could take every brand new baby, right? Every newborn, and give them the opportunity to grow up in a world where they knew what their life's purpose was, and they were given a job, they were given a duty, and that was it. And, you know, happy or not necessarily happy. Like, if you could choose to do the life's purpose, like if you were showing signs of some, you know, physical or mental trait that gives you the advanced ability to do one thing or another, then you would just be highly encouraged to go and do that thing. Like, you know, us when we were younger were able to draw. You know, what if at a young age you were given the option to be like, okay, so what is it you currently are passionate about, and then go do it, and then that would be the only thing you did for the rest of your life? Like, what would that be like?
That, well, there probably wouldn't be as much, but that sort of leads back to one of our comments, right, of over specialization, which could probably be a weakness. So probably wouldn't be good for us. But I like the idea of, like, or I've been thinking about the idea of the universe has amnesia, right? And we are pieces of the universe trying to rediscover itself. Like, think of the universe as a brain, and we're like figuring stuff out, learning to know itself.
Like, to connect, you know, like in neurons in the brain, how when something misfires in the brain, you know, there can have be serious reactions in the physical world. And, you know, human interaction with the physical world is, you know, it's constantly, I think, in battle humanity. I don't know. It's very, it's so meta. This is such a meta conversation we've been having.
And, right, so there's at least two more points that I want to make. Have you heard the phrase, as above, so below?
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about that. Really, the universe is just repeating itself sort of on a macro and micro level. Like, think of humans as like blood cells, right? Like, we're like doing tasks, figuring stuff out. And then the body has blood cells, but there's also
like atoms.
Bigger. Thinking, what's that?
Like atoms, you know?
But also on the macro scale, similar things are happening, right? So I think it's just like different levels of the same thing. And my last point, Cartesian dualism, which is sort of like more of a theological approach to what this film is talking about, in that the mind or soul is separate from its body, and it is ethereal, and what is the body? I don't know. I forget the point.
what?
I don't know. It's like it's separated from its body. Like, the mind isn't our mind. It's,
yeah, the body is a vessel. The mind is, you know, has no bounds, except for, you know, what the vessel has.
That's a really less than stellar way to end this.
All right,
okay. One more point. So your comment about the morals of the puppet master.
Right.
You said he's immoral. I said he's more of a utilitarian. And I had a couple of comments here. Because, okay, so your problem was that you don't know, or you weren't satisfied in how he was, like, willing to, like, harm people to, like, get what he wanted. Like he seemed selfish to you or something.
Yes.
Well, like, that's sort of a branch of consequentialism, in that we really can't know the gravity or the consequences that our actions cause. Like, for example, I'm reading this story called Monster, and it's about this doctor saves this kid, right? But he grows up to be a serial killer. But so in the moment, he did the right thing, but ultimately, was it right to, like, save his life? Because saving his life resulted in the death of dozens of people.
Hmm.
And there's also the train cart problem. You know, like, if you turn the track, you kill one person.
But you still kill one person.
Right. But if you're like, but turning the track is like an act of, like, you're actively doing something. So is that bad too? Or is it worse to, like, kill more people? So
by not making this.
Right. So I'm ultimately, we don't really have the scope to, like, really make absolute claims on morality. Anyway, thanks for listening to It's Like a Podcast, Ghost in the Shell. Next week, we are going to be talking about Paprika. Namaste, Master.
Thank you for listening to Saga Podcast, where we talk about animation and animation things. This is your favorite co-host, Sarah, and I would like to remind you before you head off that we do have a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, a website, and soon to be a Patreon. So if you could reach out to us, leave us a comment, a review, anything that you like, and we will appreciate all of it. Otherwise, have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Bye. See you next time. Hope you liked it. Come again.